Thanks so much for downloading the Nightcap podcast. We appreciate the support and we'd love to know that you are enjoying the pod. And now you can become a proud member of the Nightcap podcast tribe.
Along with our weekly catch-ups and up-and-coming series with more amazing guests, we've created some bespoke Nightcap podcast clothing, which you can get online now. We've teamed up with our friends at T-Mill to create t-shirts and hoodies in various sizes, colours and fits for both men and women.
Yeah, we chose T-Mill for several reasons. They make these clothes with 100% natural materials, using organic materials that are better for the environment. They use the sun and wind to power the production of these products, plus they will send you your order in packaging made from plants, not plastics.
And the best thing is they look great and they feel great. You can just tell their quality, so there's no knockoff merch here.
Yeah, it's as simple as this. Go to thenightcap.tmill.com. That's thenightcap.tmill.com to order your Nightcap podcast merch now. Hello and welcome to The Nightcap. It's Wednesday the 17th of January. Myself and Paul upstairs at Salt having a coffee and a catch up. You alright, buddy?
Yes, all good, mate. All good.
Slim, we were just chatting before we started recording about The Bear because I finally caught up with it.
Yeah.
Series 1 must have been out several years now.
No.
A couple of years?
It was the year before. So it was 2022.
Oh, was that it? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I was a little bit late onto it, but only a few months. Mm. I'll tell you where I watched it, and so hooked.
Yeah.
When I went to Lapland, it was like a 3-4-ish hour flight, I think.
Yeah.
I watched half the series on the way there, the other half on the way back on my
Amazing.
Phone. I downloaded them off Disney. Binged it in two flights.
That's great.
It was class.
I love that when you can like associate a show to where you were at the time.
Yeah.
It's really nice, especially because you watch on demand and be wherever you are.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a show. I mean,
I genuinely, until you'd said before that, I just assumed you'd watch series 2 because it was out in the summer last year, I think, or maybe a bit before.
It was sort of embarrassing, but it's just one of those things that just got pushed to the side because other things came along and then whatever. And because Hay and I don't know about like you and Marie and things, but we always do that thing where it's just like certain shows like, oh, don't watch it out me.
Yeah.
Got to always make sure that, you know.
Yeah, most we watch on our own, but like Traitors at the moment, we're watching together.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Oh, it's back on tonight. So good,
yeah.
Do you do that thing as well where you like pause it and like, where you have like a moment of, if he says that and he does that, and we have to pause it to like chat it through. And
we've only watched 3 episodes, so we're a little bit behind. But
we did
last night, and I got Esme into it last night, and she was just hooked.
I remember you saying Esme loved the last series.
No, she never watched the last one.
Oh, was it not that? It was something else then.
No, Race Across the World.
Race Across the World.
She loved.
Yeah,
Esme was like, what's this? What's going on? I was like, look, this is it's really simple. That's the format.
Yeah.
And like, she's just edge of a seat, hooked, and she's like, but they can't kill them.
Oh, it's so good. It's infuriating the early episodes though, because there's so many of them. Like, there's over 22
or something, keeping track.
I get a bit annoyed at the faithfuls that are really quiet and just don't really do anything, because they sort of know deep down, they're not maybe consciously thinking about it, they just know, I'll let all the big characters and I'll just sit here.
Yeah,
and they just don't really get questioned.
No,
they just sort of sit there.
Easy to go under the radar.
Yeah, but then that hopefully will bite them in the ass later on.
Yeah,
it's like, well, hang on, what have you actually done?
I reckon I'd be gobby from the start and like
get carried away.
Get carried away, and you make yourself.
It's a balance though. It's a target. Then you're a target, aren't you?
Yeah, not even a target. Just people are aware of you for no other reason, and there's no evidence to go on.
What a show. Anyway, back to the bear. We watched an episode the other day. I keep forgetting. I'm so bad with characters' names. Like the lead guy.
Yeah.
So he's talking about...
Carmi.
Yeah, he's talking about fuck-ups. And he's like reassuring a colleague who's just like fucked up. And he's just like, don't worry, like we fuck up. That's part of the process. And I sort of realised that we'd never really talked about like massive fuck-ups. And it's like in restaurants, your margin for error is so tiny because we've definitely talked about this before, like the show never stops. It's that whole like, and the night can run away with you before you even notice, because you can't just like a chess match just stop the timer and just like, oh, timeout, let's just redo this.
Or,
And that's like, it's so unforgiving, and it must be so hard to keep on top of that. But like, I know you've been fairly lucky throughout. You've never had like one gigantic fuck up.
No, you asked me, and there might be something, but nothing major. Like when you asked me, like trying to think back, and obviously I've made mistakes, right? I've overcooked things, I've missed things out of, and you don't realise till too late, missing ingredients and ruined things. We all have, we all do.
It's salvageable.
But yeah, well, not even that. It's just that it's not a big deal, right, like burning that or, you know, missing that. I've told a story about how I forgot the yeast in bread when I was like 19.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
That's like some, those sort of things, we all make those mistakes. So they're not major things. Yep. They're fucking annoying at the time.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't think I've done any major boo-boos.
You're really pretty lucky.
It's relatively speaking.
Absolutely. I remember then I just wrote a note down. He's talking about how the night he won like a massive award, national award.
Yeah.
And then the next day nearly burnt the restaurant down by leaving the deep fat fryer on.
Yeah.
Left it and nearly burnt the restaurant down. He was just like, that is the most humbling. Doesn't matter how good you get, you could still make mistakes.
Yeah, he's still at the mercy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, that's really humbling, but in some ways reassuring to everyone, and just like, fuck ups are sort of normal as long as you're learning from them. It's like, mate, you can't make the same mistake like five fucking times. It starts to get silly then. But
yeah,
it's part of the process for you guys. And you must have been around that or seen people go through those moments and almost empathize with them on the spot where it's like, I think you're a good cook. I think you're fucking good. But that mistake is a fucking clang out and you fucked everyone tonight because of that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you've
honestly, and it's like, it's when you've, like, when you ask me, I've witnessed some big fuck ups and
you just see it in their face.
There's a relief, but there's a, fuck, that was close.
Yeah.
That was close. Because that's the thing with this job. You're never on top.
Yeah.
Even when you think, or some people think they're on top, you've got to go in and do it again the next day.
Yeah, true.
Like, so every day you've just got to, okay, let's do it again.
Yeah.
So you're more prepared to be better and stay sort of on top, for want of a better phrase. But yeah, you've got to go in and do it again.
Yeah.
You don't just...
Relentless.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's almost to warn against complacency. It's the feeling of something could go wrong all the time, almost has to be on your shoulder the entire time to keep you on it.
And it's things that cost money as well, and wastage, which everyone hates. And yeah, just if you fuck it up, sometimes it's not salvageable. It's just got to go in the bin.
Does that stress ever get to you, or does it just sort of become normal over time? I guess you've been doing this so long now that it's second nature.
It becomes normal. You don't react as angrily, or like when you're a first dead chef and you see fuck ups, you react to it. But you know, you've seen it, you've been there. I only get angry when people try and hide it or lie about it.
Yeah,
now, just own it. That's all you want. Yeah
fair. But yeah, what a show. I mean, this we've just started, we're only halfway through the second series, but there's so many little things in it. And even conversations. I love how it's shot because it is just about the conversation. It's not overacted. Do you know what I mean? It's not like over-egged or like too theatrical or over the top. It's like, it's really down to earth. There's one scene, is it Will Poulter?
Yes, Will Poulter in Denmark.
As if they're at Noma, so to speak. They sort of allude to it without saying he's in there.
Exactly, yeah.
Was that the actual kitchen, though? Can you tell?
It's hard to tell.
Probably not.
It doesn't look like it. It's too dark. There's a lot of natural light in, from what I know of the Noma kitchen. A lot of wood. But yeah, it's sort of saying it is without it. Because I know they had as well, years ago, their development kitchen was on a boat, Noma's, just on the side.
Uh-huh.
And he stayed in a boat, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. That was an homage to that then, wasn't it? Clearly. That must have been, I love that. And it's just nice because as it's a topic and an industry I've grown to know, I can see that in the directors and producers who handle The Bear as a show are treating that industry and that the whole thing with that much respect.
Yeah.
Like the boat is an homage to Noma's sort of second restaurant, like testing restaurant, and then also when she's touring around the city just trying everything, some of those aren't actors.
It's
like real hospitality
Chicago restaurants, and
I love that. It's like real respect for the industry.
Exactly,
the fact
they've
that
not dismissed the people that are there and made Chicago what it is for its dining scene.
I absolutely love that. It's amazing. And Will Poulter in that, if you've not seen it, there's just a scene where there's a lad, he's been sent to stage at Noma to learn pastry, and he's one of the most likable characters in it, I think.
Lovely,
that lad, he's like proper gentle giant, isn't he? And he's there with Will Poulter and they're doing the bread like early. It feels like they're the only two in there because it's like 5 a.m. or whatever, and they're just cutting the bread, but they're doing a fairly simple task, but they're just getting to know each other and really root level, mm-hmm. about, you know, where are you from? What, have you got a brother and sister? And the conversation is not over dramatic. It's not like, oh my God, you know, it's just a normal chat. But what it made me realize is like the camaraderie of like actually getting to know the person who's working alongside of you. It obviously just makes teams stronger. And it's the thing that I think people maybe take for granted, but it just made me think, like, just knowing people's history, their backstory, like, what's your mum and dad's situation? He talks about his mum who's ill and things like that. I think it's then when you're in a service, you're in the shit, that you feel that, like, soldier mentality of, like, I've got your back, mates. I know more about you. I know, I've got, like, a reason to give a shit about you. Do you know
or,
what I mean?
Like, I can empathise with you. I've been where you are.
Yeah, that shared experience, I think. And I thought it was just beautifully highlighted in that scene.
It's nice. Really nice. And the industry is getting much more like that. It never used to be. Yeah. I think finding that common ground. And like, for instance, when I was at Le Manoir, there was none of that. You didn't really, apart from maybe me as a commie to another commie, you'd have a little chat about something because you're vulnerable and you want to talk to someone and you need people. But anyone a bit higher up, they were just closed. Really close, apart from like maybe like Peter Eaton, who lovely bloke, who was one of the sous chefs. The other sous chefs were absolutely shut down. You could not speak to them on a human level.
Wow.
So
it's militant, isn't it?
Yeah, that? And it kind of made them feel a bit elite. And I don't know, you can sometimes, as speaking of a younger chef, if I speak to them and you realise, oh, maybe they've struggled, or maybe they were, I don't know, a lot of people are homesick or you know, all of the, they may have had issues with this, but you just see them as this elite person in this role with no vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
So I think breaking down those barriers is really important.
Massively.
To help people move up.
Yeah, it is. And it's exactly that. I wouldn't just say that or have that feeling if I thought it was just for the sake of, oh, isn't it nice and everyone gets on. I think everyone wins, like for management or as a technique, if you want to put like a really sort of crass phrase on it. I think it enhances the team and motivates people because there's a sense of like the trust goes up, and therefore because that vulnerability, that trust and that sense of togetherness in team. So I think actually the output's better. I don't think it's just for the sake of like making sure everyone mental health is in check. I think it's also a work thing. I think it enhances
it, it is and I've seen it firsthand. I've had young chefs that I can tell they're struggling or there's an issue, and you know it's kind of up to me to speak to them, and Laura's really good with it as well. And you know, they kind of get whatever they're struggling out with, and I'll say, yeah, I was the same, because they see like me, and I'm up here, and they see the Michelin star owner and the restaurant and stuff. So you've got to be aware, like, to show them that that's not just who you are.
Yeah, man. So it doesn't define
God,
you.
I used to fucking hate that when I was, you know, I used to struggle, or I slept in once, or I did this. And you just see them react like, oh, they're human.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's such an underrated thing just to chat normally. But even when you're at work, I don't think it shows a weakness or you're taking your eye off the game. I think it actually enhances everyone.
Yeah, you can make true connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's so important. And it's highlighted brilliantly in this show, again, in a really subtle way.
Yeah.
Just how they interact and certain conversations they have.
It is. Because what's the, like, food and restaurants is the driver of the show, but it's about people and relationships. But they've really nailed the relationships in the hospitality industry. It couldn't have just been, okay, they're running restaurants and then we create some story about people. That's the authenticity. It's not just about the food and how they move as a chef and the choreography. It's that they've really understood the relationships and way people in the industry think, the struggles they have, and that's what makes it so authentic, I think.
Yeah, you're spot on. It's not done in like a Hollywood way, is it?
No.
In like a big budgety, special effects-y way. It's done in a really natural, almost like not hidden camera, but you know what I mean? Like,
it's just very like real. The one Bradley Cooper was in.
Yeah.
You know, it was right in that, but you know, they'd forced narratives in there that were Hollywood-y.
Was that Chef? No, that wasn't Chef. What was that?
Burnt,
that's it. Yeah. Some of them are just like that. Is there any, like, and this isn't, because it is obviously one of the best shows ever made to do with the cooking world. I think we're safe to say that.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the best dramas of modern times as well.
It's
It's interesting, great. Like, side point, that it's just got a few Emmys, but it was down as a comedy show.
And it's interesting that, because it's one of those where it's like, there was a few moments throughout the show that I laughed out loud.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it was a comedy. It's a laugh a minute at all,
it's
is
not.
It?
Especially like the way American comedies are. It's just not. There is a bit of cynicism that they're in that category. So
they could get an award.
Succession and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Side point, it's like if you laughed once, it's a comedy. Like, yeah. I don't know how that works.
But yeah, sorry. What were you going to say about fuck-ups? Or?
No. The last thing I was going to say was, even not to be like, you know, cynical about it, but is there anything in the show that you're like, no? Because there is one for me. There's one, and it's a guess, but I wanted to pitch this to you.
It's not fresh in my mind.
Okay.
So I'd have to watch it again to have a look at something like that. I can't really think of anything because I watched it in the summer as soon as it came out.
There's one thing that has happened 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And that, so now, like, by the fourth time, I literally turned to Hay and I was like, that is a bit much, isn't it? And what it is they're testing new dishes.
Yeah.
And that it's so bad they spit it out.
That's
happened about 4 times.
Yes,
I'm like, surely you're there or thereabouts. Like, I can't imagine. It's like, oh god, like,
yeah, that's
not
like forgetting how to cook.
Yeah. But that's happened loads of times.
There's home cooks where it's like, it's not right, but I wouldn't spit it out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've seen they're constantly spitting shit out.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right there.
What the fuck? Yeah. How bad are they? I'm like, they're shit.
I've forgotten about that.
He's like, I put way too much salt in spat. I was like, weren't you one of the best chefs in the world, mate? Like, what the fuck do you mean you put loads to it? Like,
yeah, the execution shouldn't be a problem. It should just be, is the dish right? Yeah. Is it working?
Exactly. Yeah, it's so funny.
No, that's fair. That must be a bit of dramatisation.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. I'll allow that one.
Yeah,
I'll
allow that. A little bit of artistic licence. Yeah.
That's good, though. What else we got going on? I've written a few bits down here. We got a WhatsApp message from you the other day, and I thought Hayley was bad with her pasta and sauce.
Oh, we're going to throw Marie under the bus.
We are. Yeah. I am. I am. No, I'd never even seen this, though.
No,
this
I didn't.
One before. So it was a pot noodle, but it was a king pot. So it was one of those giant pots.
Oh, is that what they are? The big ones?
Yeah. But it was a carbonara one. I had never known that they'd ever done.
And what did it say on the? Let me get the photo up.
I think it was a king pot carbonara.
But there was something that just really.
It was almost like a pink pot. And I was like, where is Marie even getting that from? Is she seeking it out herself on the internet? Like, what?
Yeah.
Never seen it.
Stir it up with a taste of Italy in 5 minutes. That's what wound me up.
That's so good.
No, it's just, and what's really annoying, so that was Saturday, I think. Mm. On Wednesday, she made the carbonara from my book.
No way.
Yeah. Slightly tweaked the method because she couldn't get guanciale. It's hard to get. So she got pancetta. So you don't get as much fat, so you can't whisk it and do that hollandaise kind of method that's in there. So I just said, oh, do the recipe, but just, we'll tweak the method slightly. So she made it and loved it.
Did she? And then still went out.
Saturday
and
went and did that. I was like, what?
She's doing it twice. She's trolling you.
Oh, she's trolling you. She knows it. I got the photo with no context, I think it was. Yeah.
That's fucking great. She knows what she's doing. She probably didn't even eat it.
I just messaged her about it. It's over. We're done. Yeah. We're done, I think. That's it was. Great. Yeah, we're done.
Right. I mean, look, there's nothing against pot noodle because the old pot noodle is fine. You love a super noodle sandwich. You're not too far removed, is
it?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not one of those, you know, I'm not one of those chefs who's like, oh God, pot noodle. Fucking those 20 chefs who says that. But like, don't fucking call it a carbonara because it's not. I know it's they're not trying to sell it.
It's just false. It's just wrong. This is reminding me, like, I think I've said to you before that just because we do this, I sometimes by proxy get asked questions that are actually for you, but they give them to me.
Okay.
Which makes no sense because I've got that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, what the fuck? But someone the other day that we were like, I sort of knew him, but not. We played basketball together. We're waiting to go on the court. It was just like, oh, so how's that podcast going? You know, I was like, yeah. And he goes, he's a Michelin star chef, is he? I was like, yeah. He goes, so he wouldn't eat at McDonald's, would he? Like straight away, like that. But I then feel like your PR officer. I'm like, Paul is impartial to the odd McDonald's. I'm answering on your behalf. It, like, it makes no fucking sense. Like, what am I doing? But I do find myself almost defending you. Like, well, no, it's relative to price. It's all these sorts of things. I was like, fuck's sake.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
That, like, is mad.
It's fucking crazy. Oh, we got some correspondence. We got one from Sam who says, hi, question for Paul. Have you got any recommendations of books? I think I know what you're going to say. But have you got any recommendations of books that have got great recipes for offal? A butcher we use always sends us ox tongue and we just don't know what to do with it sometimes. Any help would be amazing. What's like a classic ox tongue thing normally?
Is the best way to do it is give it a really good brine. It needs a brine for me. Yeah. I would do, I don't know a recipe off my head, but like a lower salt solution over a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we've done here. And then it needs a classic sort of braising gently.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know the exact time off my head, but it's something we'd generally do. Low oven, several hours and let it cool, and then the skin will just peel off. When the skin peels off, you know it's done.
Yeah.
Oh, and you just get this beautiful, beautiful tongue.
Is it quite forgiving then in terms of that?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a tough old piece of gear. Yeah. So yeah, it's quite, it's got a bit of a wide margin of error.
And that would be the method you would do regardless of then what you'd go to do with it next.
Yeah, exactly. And there's loads you can do with it, you know, depending on the amount of salt you give it, it would have kind of more of a pastrami curedy kind of texture, and you can slice it thinly.
Yeah, lovely.
It's lovely, like roasted, glazed in a sauce, barbecued, those sort of things. There's a lot you can do with it.
Beautiful.
The best one for offal is Fergus Henderson's Nose to Tail, because there's a lot.
You mentioned that in our books episode from a few months ago.
Yeah, my meat book, there's a bit of offal, not a huge amount, but yeah, that, because it's covering so much. And a lot of it is adaptable, like if it's, oh, well, that's similar to that on a cow, I can use that method.
Yeah.
And it strips it down to basics, so you get the techniques and then you can just evolve it. But that's nice. The best book for it.
Solid advice. There you go, Sam. Got another one here from Niall. He said, hi, lads. I've got into cooking in the last year and I've been listening to the pod since end of November, start of December. Just wanted to say my heart goes out to Paul, who has to deal with all the rubbish comments from all the... all of the empty heads on, very polite way of saying,
empty heads.
Twats. empty heads on TikTok. Those creamy scrambled eggs looked thick and lovely. Yeah, they did, mate. They look great. But
yeah,
there was, I don't think there was anything too controversial in your scrambled eggs one.
No.
There's nothing controversial in any of them. But,
no,
you know,
but to the public, TikTok isn't audience for great food.
No.
So it's always going to have people like, because they've never seen that.
Yeah,
like, what the actual fuck is that?
You didn't put milk in it.
So that is controversial and offensive, the fact that it's like moist.
Yeah, yeah.
And like so upset and offended by it.
Mm. And oh, then, you sent a fair few screenshots. There was one particular person who left like 100 comments, didn't
they? Oh, there was loads,
like, what the fuck?
Because like, he woke up and just chose anger.
Yeah,
like, because it was in the morning as well.
You were in the firing line.
Yeah, I was just pissing myself off. I've got to send you screenshots. But what's funny is like, because I just, you know, and we've spoken about it many times, I won't go into it, I generally give sarcastic replies to those comments that are either ignorant or just pointless. And people were saying to me the other day, oh God, you just can't handle constructive criticism. So one, it's not constructive.
It's not constructive whatsoever.
Two, I don't need feedback on eggs.
Yeah.
I don't need it.
Yeah, you're not putting it out there for feedback either. You are literally telling people this is my favourite or best way of doing this recipe.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like,
that's it.
If you don't like it, that's fine. You missed the point.
Yeah.
But I don't need feedback on to fry, scramble, poach, make an omelette. I don't. Yeah. Like, way beyond that now. Yeah, and it's not arrogant to say so.
Are you going
to
go through the egg? Are you going to go omelette, scrambled eggs? Are you going to keep going eggs?
Yeah, I'm going to do a bit of an egg series, as it's quite popular.
Yeah, it is.
Like, do some bits. Like, you can throw a carbonara into there. And
that's true.
Sort of, you can do a hollandaise in there as well.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, nice.
You know. But what's funny is, and this typifies what I've said before, especially around, like, going carbonara. Everyone's an expert on carbonara on TikTok at the moment because they've seen it 5-10 years ago. They wouldn't have batted an eyelid if it was cream and ham and peas and mushrooms or something.
Yeah, sure.
But because they've seen that person, that's where they've linked it to.
Yeah.
So it's the same with the scrambled eggs. So many people are like, oh, he's just copied Gordon Ramsay's scrambled eggs. So it's like, Gordon does it classically.
Yeah.
Like, he adds creme fraiche to it. A lot of people do. I don't.
Yeah.
But because they've seen Gordon do it, it's like, Gordon created that.
Yeah.
That's Gordon's recipe.
There was no scrambled eggs before Gordon.
Exactly. Yeah. That's blown their mind. Yeah. And they're like, anyone who does that now has copied Gordon.
Oh,
like, no, I've been doing it a long time. But that just shows how clueless these fucking knobheads are.
Yeah. So true, man.
It's so funny. Yeah.
Fucking great. I look forward to the next.
Yeah.
Speaking of your pasta book, actually, I did the puttanesca.
Oh, did you?
At the weekend. Good? Yeah, I got a photo. I couldn't find the, was it Pecheri?
Pecheri.
I couldn't find the giant. I went to M&S, went to Waitrose, couldn't find it. So I ended up just getting like what was the biggest one I could find, which was like a giant penne.
Yeah, you sort can of use, thing. Like I said, you can use any pasta for it. I just like a meaty one. Traditionally, it's spaghetti.
The only thing, which now looking back at this, is obviously like your book is beautiful, but obviously like every photo, like they're not fake photos, but they are enhanced to make them look so beautiful and colourful.
Yeah.
That when I put the dish side by side the book, I'm like, I'm not sure that's the set. Like, it doesn't look as pretty or as nice, but I did make it.
That looks tasty.
So, it was tasty. Yeah. Like, I bloody loved it. It's just like all the capers.
Did Hayley have it as well?
Yeah. She helped chop everything and
oh, nice.
Put it through. I couldn't get any marjoram.
Oh, okay. So is oregano similar-ish?
I did some sage, but I did it in like a sage butter and drizzled that. Because I know you said finish with olive oil.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, I love a little bit of crispy burnt sage and butter, so I drizzled that over the top instead, which I thought was good.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for doing the recipe. I'm glad it was
fucking lovely.
It was nice, yeah.
But you're right, I think that sauce gets so, like, what's the word? It's like, I guess it's sharp.
Pungent, in a polite way is the best way.
It's fierce. It's a fierce sauce. It's like it's not like hiding or subtle. It's like a bold old sauce.
You've got bold flavours. The tomatoes is the most subtle thing in there. Yeah. You've got olives, you've got capers, you've got
shallots,
anchovies,
garlic.
All strong flavours. So and strong. If you do the marjoram, that's strong as well.
Yeah.
It packs a punch. I think that's why the whores used it.
Yeah. And then I think that's why it works so well with the chunkier pasta that does have a bite to it, because it can sort of take
it.
Like, I know it's traditionally, you said in the book, served with spaghetti.
Yeah.
But I think it could get a little bit, I prefer it like that.
Yeah, for me, it gives you the meat
that
the dish doesn't have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's strong and beautiful. I mean, it's still nice with spaghetti, but I want something like with some substance to bite into.
Absolutely. I think the most satisfying thing for me, other than the taste, is like we cooked it for my dad and his partner who came round.
Yeah.
And when we served it, it's like, it is, like I say, it is just pasta on a plate, but I love like the authentic old recipes.
Mm.
They can somehow just look so elegant.
Yeah.
Even though they aren't elegant. Yeah. And they're not rooted in elegance. They're rooted in sort of means to an end, you know, sort of like leftover ingredients, back streets of Italy sort of thing, hundreds of years old. But on a plate served in the right way with a little bit of finesse.
Yeah.
Just looks so great. And it doesn't look pretentious. It just looks like fucking solid. And I love that about those old school Italian recipes.
Yeah. Yeah, so absolutely. Nice. And there's nothing to hide behind as well. Did your dad and his partner enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it, mate. It was beautiful. It blew dad away because it was just like, it looks familiar too, doesn't it? Just pasta and a red sauce.
Yeah.
So when it doesn't taste like that, he was like, it just doesn't taste like any what I imagined it to.
Yeah, you don't expect as much flavour if you don't know it. Yeah.
Exactly. It was really exciting. Loved it. Me and Hay have like booked in a whole night this Saturday to do another recipe from it.
Ah, what are you thinking?
Together. Don't know yet. Maybe a filled pasta one.
Okay.
Because we wanted to, that was quite simple. That was one of the most simple ones in the book actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But we thought we've got a whole Saturday night free, so we're going to make our own pasta and maybe do a filled one this weekend. So we'll report about
it. I've just bought this, actually. I know this is audio and people can't
see
it, but we'll put a photo on.
That's cool. So it looks like a mini pasta morta sort of thing, but with
it's a raviolo mold.
But
we'll put the photo up for people. But you basically put your pasta over that. You can put two different fillings in it. So I can put one there.
Oh, that's
so
clever.
I could do it for the chef's table at the weekend. So like a braised pork cheek in there and maybe like a truffled curd in there. And then you roll it over. So you get this double ravioli in one.
That's clever. And it's good for the consistency of the shapes and sizes. And
yeah. Like. So I need to have a look at it and have a play with it.
We'll pop a photo on the Instagram page so you guys can check it out. Right, should we do some top fives?
Yes, definitely.
This was me this week and it was simply top five places I've sort of bucket list places.
Okay. Where did you decide like location wise?
Went the world,
good. Oh, you went big.
But in some ways, this maybe I'm doing myself a disservice, but I thought I'm a bit of a basic bitch here. Because like a lot of these are like, I think would be on a lot of people's bucket list.
Yeah, but like, you know, they're on the bucket list for a reason, I suppose. You're not just going to find somewhere nobody's heard of, really.
And I think it's because it's a mixture of genuinely wanting to try the food, but in terms of like what these places mean to the culinary world, they are like tourist attractions.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's a bit like how sort of you were talking about the Gavroche last week. It's like as much about wanting to try it as actually going, oh, I'm in the Gavroche. Like,
yes. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I could guess a couple of places that are in it, I reckon.
The weirdest thing, and maybe this is a cop out, I've not got these in any order and I couldn't really decide on an order.
I just authentically
couldn't look and go, that's my number one. I had absolutely no clue.
Oh, fair enough. So it's just a five.
It's just a five. Yeah. There was only one honourable mention, but the honourable mention is because it did really prick my interest, but it's closed. And we did a whole chef's table episode during lockdown on this, and that was Favican.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just because it's just like mystical in the woods in Sweden.
Yeah,
I wish I'd
have gone.
It looked incredible, didn't it?
Such a unique restaurant.
And to have stayed, like, and just immerse yourself in that world and all of the preserving and everything.
And I'd want to go in the winter with the snow. And
you'd want to feel like you're the last person on earth and you're just in this little hut having some food.
Yeah.
That was one that, well, we did a whole episode on it during lockdown, but shame that's closed. But that was an honourable mention just because I thought if it was open, it would make the top five.
Yeah.
Okay, so top five, here we go, in random order. First one I wrote down was Gagan's restaurant.
Oh, okay, nice.
In, yeah, this is one of the first, a lot, chef's tables are great sort of access point to the world's, you know, outside of England, like stuff that I wasn't as a fay with. And obviously it's got huge notoriety because it's been the only Indian restaurant in the top 50 for several years.
Yeah, it's Bangkok.
Yeah, Bangkok. And I think there was a bit of a weird thing about it closing and reopening, but still in Bangkok, and it was all a bit messy. I don't really, but it seems to be open again now and everything seems to be going well with it. But, you know, a couple of signature dishes in there, the yogurt on a spoon, which he's done since he opened. And then, like, but he still has like that naan bread main course where you tear bread and stuff like that. So it seems like that perfect, like curry is my one of my favorite things. So to have that elevated, but, you know, in that way, and it still be accessible and still feel like a little bit like a takeaway, just seems fucking cool.
And I remember hearing about it at the time, it's sort of getting big, and you're like, an Indian in Bangkok?
Yeah, it's so unusual.
Thailand, it's very unusual, very bold.
It's a bit like Ivan Ramen in New York, similar story.
Yeah.
Like an unexpected sort of place for him to be one of the most notorious and people to be notorious for doing what he did. Again, Ivan Ramen, that would have been on this list if I hadn't have been. Very lucky to have gone. That would have been. So yeah, Gagan's restaurant's in there. Then we sort of touched upon it then, but Noma.
It's just, I knew that'd be on the list.
It's got to be though, isn't it? Isn't that just everyone, isn't it? It feels like some sort of pinnacle now.
I think I need to, because I'm gutted I didn't go to the one before it moved, the original Noma.
Yeah.
And I'm gutted I didn't go there. Mm-hmm. I had opportunities, but it never happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm agreement and need to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's weird, like even the amount of guests we've had on the nightcap, like there's quite a few of them have staged there or been there at some point to either eat or work. So it's like, it's not just a pinnacle, but it seems like something that everyone in the industry, you know, gravitates towards, talks about.
Right. Looks the impression it's had on the industry is huge.
Yeah, massive. Looking at some of the like pictures of some of the dishes that have come out of the sort of 2.0 version of Noma are so dramatic looking.
Yeah.
You see like the duck head?
Yeah.
And it even says like eat it with your like you eat the brain with your tongue. Like it's proper challenging for some people. It would be, and it looks very striking on a plate. Like
what season would you like to go? Because there's a vegetable one, there's a fish one, and then there's
the ocean one.
Meat one.
Oh, I think in Copenhagen as well, I sort of love the, I think maybe the ocean, maybe the sea and the, I think that'd be cool. I think I'd love that. But I mean, fuck it, any of them.
Yeah.
You know, really fussy, like turn it, no, I'll come back. But yeah, Noma's in there, obvious reasons really. Next one, I'm going to go for, just because I loved going to this place so much and I would love to stay here and eat the more informal version of his food. And that is Casa Maria Luigia from Massimo Pittura.
Oh, okay.
New place. A lot of the Slow Food, Fast Cars book based on that place.
Is that place the place that's slightly outside Mondonero?
Exactly.
And they're doing his old dishes?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, so there's two.
Oh,
so
okay.
So it's an old farm that's 350 years old that they bought.
Yeah.
And you could stay there. But their philosophy is home from home.
Yeah.
But to the side, sort of on a wing of it, they've got like his classic dishes that he doesn't do anymore at Osteria Franciscana that you can go to, which I would be less interested in because I've been there. Mm-hmm. But then their main restaurant on site is home from home stuff.
That's
the menu changes every day. It's almost like staff food.
Yeah.
And it's like often using the wood-fired oven outside. Uh-huh. Lasagnas, and it's just, it looks wholesome and amazing. But Modena was just one of my favorite places I've ever visited.
Yeah.
And it's just so authentically Italian. It's just so cool. Going to Massimo's when I went was just one of the best days of my life, probably. That sounds dramatic, but fucking hell, it was. But to go and stay there in that setting, be more informal, like you, they have this impression, there's a video of it online, that you can sort of almost walk around the farm and the house and even into the kitchen. You just sort of like just exist in the place rather than like it's a hotel. Do you know what I mean? You just live there for a couple of nights.
Sounds amazing.
So it would just be amazing
to get him on the
pod,
but do it there.
Yeah. Fuck me. That would be amazing.
That'd be epic. Yeah.
So yeah, that's in there. And then last two, both English now. Longclume.
Yeah.
Again, just the notoriety. It's been top of the list for ages in Good Food Guides and all those sorts of things. Simon Rogan, just so well revered, isn't he?
Yeah. I'd like to go back. I went in 2009, so completely different. The village is beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big part of it as well, isn't it? It's like the setting of all of these, I think, comes into it. Like to go to Copenhagen for Noma, to go to Modena, it's like the context adds a lot to a restaurant. Same with even Salt, like in its, you know, that grade two listed building, Shakespeare's Home. We talk about it on the podcast, don't we?
Yeah.
The context helps put the position the restaurant.
Exactly, yeah.
So Longclume is stalwart of sort of British modern cuisine, isn't it? And then last but not least, maybe this would be number one, is the Fat Duck.
Yeah, cool.
Never been, but it's just, it's somehow, because I think very few places almost earn the right to be so Willy Wonka about things.
Mm, yeah.
Because it can look so bad. It can look almost pretentious.
So easy
and
to
so
bad. It looked like you're copying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even when you go on their website and stuff, which I did the other day, it's like, you don't book a table, you book tickets.
Yeah.
You don't book, the set menu, you book, it's something like, oh, what was it? It was like the something atmosphere you book. It's like so, but he just gets away with it. And I think because there's so much mystery involved, I'd love to just hand myself over to that experience and just.
Yeah, it's one of them where you've just got to, right, I'm coming. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I don't need to make any decisions today.
Exactly.
I'm just going to sit down and you're going to entertain me for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah. And I wouldn't want to know what we were going to have until I got there. Yeah. I wouldn't want to look at it online or whatever.
Yeah. I would want to go back. I've been twice. I was very fortunate to go twice. But I want to go back because I haven't been since 2010.
Mm.
So it's very different again.
Suddenly like 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And the odd person who I know who've gone have said mental things about some of the things they do for the experience in terms of personalising it for the individual as well. So just all that stuff, it would feel like a magic trick, the whole thing.
Exactly, because I never used to do that when I went the first two times. Yeah.
So it'd just be cool. So yeah, lots of obvious stuff on there that I imagine are on a lot of people's list, but Gargan's Restaurant, Noma, The Fat Duck, Longclume and Casa Maria Luigia.
Nice list, yeah.
Fairly solid. Nice, I mean, you could go fucking forever, really.
Yeah.
Loads of ones I don't even know exist that would be amazing. But
I wonder what the cost would be, flights, accommodation, food, just to do all five. Yeah.
Just take a year out and just spend it. Just do that. Fucking hell, that would be amazing. So there we go. Right, your top five for next week. I've got a couple here, so I'm going to see what tickles you fancy. Some sort of more practical than others. One was pie fillings. I was in the Covent Market in Oxford the other day and there was a big pie shop and it was like the queue out the door. Yeah. Maybe it was the context of like, in Oxford it was fucking freezing.
Yeah.
Everyone queuing for a pie. It felt so Victorian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, I suddenly thought, pie fillings, because it was like this big board. We weren't even having pies, but between us all we're going, I'd have that one. I'd have that one. So I didn't know whether pies, is that a bit too broad? Is it a bit too
No,
boring?
You go sweet and savoury and there's a lot to play with there. Yeah, could do that. What was the other one you were thinking?
The other one was sort of top five, but I was going to do like top five items on a menu, so you had to design your ideal top like five course menu.
So
it would be like starter, fish, mains, desserts and a drink or something, but it's like your top five, like sit down, you choose your meal sort of thing.
I could do that one. Yeah, I'll do that one.
Great.
Pies we'll do another time.
Yeah,
we'll
do pies or something. Yeah. Okay, great. Nice one. I think that is about it.
Well, I've had some correspondence from Shakalaka.
Oh, yeah.
Regular listeners to the pod have heard about Shakalaka.
How's he doing?
if people who don't know who Shakalaka is, he's a chef that we know. We never actually met, actually. We know him through, we've got a mutual friend.
Yeah.
And so I've known each other for ages, and he's worked in some good places. He's been doing a bit of temping, and he's sent us quite a few stories and photos of places with no names, because he won't, because a bastard. I always want to know. Not that we'd ever obviously put on the pod, but I just want to know. So he sent me another one yesterday.
Great.
So all right, chef, hope you're well. I heard the roguest story ever tonight. So he caught up with an old mate from where he's from Shakalaka. People can probably guess where he's from. So he was like, he wouldn't even tell him where this was. And he said, he's working at a hotel in London and the breakfast chef sticks all the eggs in a 10-litre tub and blends them with a big stick. So that is in the shell.
What?
So he's not cracking them.
What the fuck?
He sticks them all in a 10-litre, big stick blender, and then passes it through a sieve.
That is filth.
Cooks it for scrambled eggs, and they sacked him, but apparently he's been doing it for a long time.
That is fucking filthy.
That is absolutely fucking gross.
That is disgusting.
So many reasons why. One, it's lazy.
Oh.
Disgustingly lazy.
Yeah.
don't care how many eggs you're cooking. You know, and if you're that lazy, just buy a whole egg in a carton.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you should do that.
Yeah, no, but sure.
Do that rather than that. That's better than that. Yeah, and then,
well,
I mean...
Well, yeah, outside of shells, there could be all sorts of shit.
Yeah, there's poo on them sometimes. Yeah. And that. Like, and there's, you don't know where they've been. And then you're grinding it, and yeah, you're passing it through a sieve, but you're still...
Yeah,
you know,
there'll be little bits.
Powdery. I'd love to know what the result looks like.
Oh my God. That is shocking.
What is that?
That is shocking.
Yeah, shakalaka coming up with the goods.
How much time are you saving as well? Like, mate, that is... This guy, he's like an insider, isn't he?
He is.
He's like leading a double life.
It don't take that long. Like, how many breakfasts are you doing that you need to do that? Are you that short-staffed? Because, I don't know, say you're doing 500 breakfasts. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you scale up the team. Like, if you're doing it on your own, that's... You wouldn't be doing it. Like,
it's fucking incredible.
You wouldn't be. Like... It's just fucking disgusting.
Also, to get away with it for that long means so many people must have seen it and not said anything.
Yeah.
Because he's not hiding. He's not taking his... Oh, he's taking his eggs and his stick blender into the shed again. I don't know what he's doing in there.
You can just imagine it's this known thing. And yeah. You have a new chef come in or a new waiting staff and they have staff food after what's left over off the breakfast buffet, I imagine. Like, just don't touch the eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
Have this, have that. Yeah, don't touch the eggs. And so everyone avoids the eggs, but it's not said. But yeah, apparently they got rid of him.
Thank fuck. That is rogue. It just baffles me. What? The lack of pride as well is...
Outside of his mind.
It's insane. Shit, mate. Maybe use an experiment on TikTok. You should troll everyone on TikTok and go, want to save time? Get a stick blender. I'm just telling you how to see what the comments come through there.
Oh, God, yeah.
Amazing. Oh, actually, we got another one. Review on, what was it? Spotify from... Oh, his handle is Scone Oz, and I think this guy in Australia we've had a couple of messages from. He was referring to a episode we did just before Christmas where we were talking loads about Guinness.
Yeah.
Said, love all the Guinness chat. Tend to agree with Paul, though. Lots of places I don't drink Guinness in, depending on the pub. But he said, if you ever go back to Dublin, try the Confession Box.
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't know if you've heard of. I hadn't. I googled it. It looks really cool. Very small Confession Box, obviously, but it looks like one of those, like... hidden gems of like where
not the Temple Bar everyone knows and
exactly
goes to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So good recommendation there. The Confession Box from Scone Oz. Thanks again for all your messages. Had loads this week. If you want to send questions like Niall did earlier, Sam did earlier, @thenightcap_pod on all the usual social media platforms, and rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, 5 stars, please. Every single time. We will always read those out. It's really important for us. If you can do it, we would be very, very grateful. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
Yeah, see you later.
Thanks so much for downloading the Nightcap podcast. We appreciate the support and we'd love to know that you are enjoying the pod. And now you can become a proud member of the Nightcap podcast tribe.
Along with our weekly catch-ups and up-and-coming series with more amazing guests, we've created some bespoke Nightcap podcast clothing, which you can get online now. We've teamed up with our friends at T-Mill to create T-shirts and hoodies in various sizes, colours and fits for both men and women.
Yeah, we chose T-Mill for several reasons. They make these clothes with 100% natural materials, using organic materials that are better for the environment. They use the sun and wind to power the production of these products, plus they will send you your order in packaging made from plants, not plastics.
And the best thing is they look great and they feel great. You can just tell their quality, so there's no knockoff merch here.
Yeah, it's as simple as this. Go to thenightcap.tmill.com. That's thenightcap.tmill.com to order your Nightcap podcast merch now.